Dr. Bastillo, members of the board, it is 11:01. We are back from break. We'll start this section of the meeting with a roll call to ensure staff and board are present. Dr. Bastillo.
Here.
Dr. King.
Here.
Mr. Leone.
Here.
Mr. Freer.
Here.
Mr. Barton.
Here.
Ms. Crowley. Ms. Crowley, you're muted.
Sorry, here.
Ms. Bryant.
Here.
Ms. Richardson.
Present.
Ms. Sinish.
Here.
And my name is Judy Chepius. And I do see Mr. Harris also on the call with us. We are all present. Dr. Bastillo.
Great. Okay. We are now on to the initial review for case 2387, Katrina Cecil Denton. Is this Mindy for the?
That's me.
Oh, okay. Ms. Sinish.
Case 2387 was opened after review of a complaint filed by MS, the mother of a patient, alleging that Dr. Cecil Denton, PT, would not recommend greater frequency for her son's home health PT because she said insurance would deny it. The mother states that Dr. Cecil Denton was aware that her son was undergoing serial casting prior to the evaluation, but then used that as a reason to not treat her child. The mother also reported that the information in the initial evaluation was not discussed during the initial appointment. Ms. Cecil Denton received a copy of the investigative report. The potential violations identified include ARS 322044, engaging in the performance of substandard care by a physical therapist due to a deliberate or negligent act or failure to act, regardless of whether actual injury to the patient is established. ARS 322044, making misleading, deceptive, untrue, or fraudulent representations in violation of this chapter or in the practice of the profession. And ethics principle 71C, a physical therapist shall recognize that third-party payer contracts may limit in one form or another the provision of physical therapy services. Third-party limitations do not absolve the physical therapist from making sound professional judgments that are in the patient's best interest. A physical therapist shall avoid underutilization of services. This matter is for your review.
Great, thank you. Is the complainant MS on the phone?
I haven't seen her name or number so far.
All right. And Ms. Cecil Denton, I saw you previously.
I am here.
Okay, great. Perfect. Do you have anything to say to the board to begin?
No opening statements at this time. Thank you.
Okay, great. Can you be willing to answer questions?
Absolutely.
Okay, great. Does anybody have any questions to begin with?
Dr. King, this is Mr. Greer. I don't have any questions, but I'm going to need some help from the professional members of the board on this one.
Yeah. Sure.
If I could ask just a couple of questions, Ms. Denton, are you aware, had the patient had therapy before you started working with him?
So I had only done their evaluation, and I believe they had therapy before at an outpatient setting, and I don't believe that they had home health before. Their sibling was being treated within our company as well, and that's where their mother was using her experience in feeling like she knew the guidelines for treatment.
Yeah. So the patient had qualified for DDD services, and then you were in the house doing the initial evaluation for home health.
Yes, he had qualified. Actually, I think the way it happened is his sibling was getting services through our company, and so the mother and the support coordinators say recommended, because her son has a diagnosis that he could possibly services as well through the DDE and through
him. Okay. And so after evaluating him, was he already in his serial cast, or was he entering into serial casting treatment?
Yes, in the process. No, he was.
And how much longer did he have in the cast before?
Casting procedure usually lasts a month, depending on how long it takes. And one leg was doing well and progressing well, and so they ended with that leg, but the affected leg needed a few more weeks. And that's where the mother asked me, really at the beginning of the session, whether the physical therapy, what that entailed, things like that.
Okay. And
so
tell me a little bit about your recommendation then. Your initial recommendation versus a long or long-term recommendation post
So long recommendation was once a week for the patient because he was ambulatory. I observed him independently transferring on his own, participating with functional activities such as attending to jump, squat. We did balance testing, things like that. So usually or typically with our company, with a child that's ambulatory and doesn't have risk for contractures, we see them once a week, right. And that's standard for usually home health care. And so that was my initial recommendation for the mother at that time. But because of her requesting intensive physical therapy, and she told me that that's what her providers wanted for serial testing for her son, that she asked me if we provided physical therapy and that I told her that I would discuss this with my supervisor because, as far as I knew, the most frequent we've ever been approved through the DDD is 2 times a week.
Okay.
So, at that point, after the evaluation, I told her I recommended once a week just for him. And she said, during that evaluation that she disagreed, that he has more issues, balance, coordination issues than her daughter at the time. And so she wouldn't agree to once a week. Go ahead.
Was your thought process then once serial casting was completed, potentially increasing the intensity to try to maintain the gains? We achieved with serial casting.
So for me, I really was just looking at the diagnosis, what I was seeing objectively as far as his balance. And because he was able to do most things, I probably would have kept it at that once a week just because our resources for in-home, especially in our region, is very limited. But then every quarter, we have the ability to do a progress report through the DDD, and we could recommend to increase, which I have done with some of my patients, to increase frequency if we feel like it's needed. So every 3 months we have to submit that progress to the DDD, and that's a standard practice if needed to increase frequency.
Do you know, was he being serial casted because of range of motion issues, or was it sensory?
Toe walking. So toe walking is very common with autism. He has cerebral palsy diagnosis, but I don't believe he had the official diagnosis with autism. And it is very common in our autistic population that children do toe walk. And so I believe he was being serial casted for the range of motion in his ankles, but I also talked to the mother regarding that toe walking is behavioral. And so we also recommended the ABA services for him to help with the behavioral toe walking. And I also know that that is a sensory issue for him.
Was he also receiving occupational therapy?
So I believe he was. I don't think he was receiving it at the school setting, but I believe he was in the home setting.
Okay, so OT in the home, and PT was recommended to go outpatient.
By his physicians, yes, but since it was recommended, I think he had a support trainer, so they recommended the evaluation done for the home setting as well.
Okay. And so just to help me understand, so after talking to your supervisor, the mom wanted twice a week, you're recommending...
She wanted at least twice a week before she would even consider going with our company.
Okay. And so because you weren't able to provide that, did she go with a different company?
I am actually not sure. She wanted to speak with my supervisor, so my supervisor is now was her main contact.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I guess my question is, like, so after you did speak with your supervisor, you did revise your thought process on providing more intensive therapy in an outpatient setting. How was that ever communicated back to the patient's mother?
Yes, that was communicated to her as soon as mine and my supervisor had the opportunity to speak with her, and the evaluation was not submitted until we discussed it with her.
Okay. And then she did agree to that scenario, or you don't know?
Well, she didn't argue with the evaluation being submitted, but she did not agree to, she didn't state that she agreed to our decision.
Sure. It would have just been convenient to have home health. Both children at the same time or similar times to,
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Is it pretty typical to build a plan of care in the home health setting around what the insurance will allow versus just
I'm not sure if it really had anything to do with the insurance, but I know that we were discussing whether the DDD or Access would pay for two types of therapies at the same time. And so in the best interest of the patient, we decided not to submit the evaluation for home care up until they completed the intensive or the outpatient, because we didn't want them to be denied the outpatient because they were already getting physical therapy at home.
Got it.
Any other questions? So, Kelly, what are your thoughts on this?
So DDD is just it's a very different funding source. They do dictate what can and can't happen.
Mm-hmm.
You can recommend 5 days a week, but DDD will tell you that you're authorized for one.
Right.
There are no other options.
Right.
For the practitioner, it's not unusual to see a child in their home once a week. Serial casting, though, there's going to be things that he can't do with therapy, so it makes sense to me to limit. I would have liked to have seen them be able to receive twice a week after serial casting, just to try to maintain,
mm-hmm.
intensify.
Right.
You know, you did this casting for a certain amount of time. How do we capture all that we potentially gained? Because if it's toe walking, you have a lot to strengthen. He's been immobilized now for a certain period of time. Those muscles now are deconditioned, deteriorated some. And if he's got CP, I don't know if there's spasticity involved and all of those things as well, right? So that's when you want to hit that hard post Botox injection, post serial casting, post anything like that to try and, you know, make the best of that intervention. That's when the twice a week, I think, would have been the most appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not seeing anything as a Val that looked like he needed in the intensity of twice a week necessarily. He's got developmental delays. He's got some cerebral palsy, right? He's got autism. He has CRS services. He's got some other services that are helpful for him. And he's in school. And so there's lots of resources for him too. But I would have preferred to have seen, look, we'll start with once a week while he's in his cast. We'll reassess. Let's do another reassessment. I'll get with DDD, make sure they can approve that to reassess what he looks like out of a serial cast. And then we'll make a plan of care around that and see how he does. That would make the most sense to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I felt like.
So,
go ahead.
Dr. King or Dr. Vecchio, what did the licensee wrong here?
He made a recommendation that the mom didn't agree with, and so.
I know that's how I read the case.
She didn't do anything wrong.
No.
In my mind, the allegations are not substantiated.
Right.
I think she did. I would have liked to have seen her hang in there and recommend twice a week after the serial casts are gone just to see what happens there. But in the moment, she didn't make an inappropriate recommendation, in my mind.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. You're not going to always please the parents in these situations. And I think, you know, the more intensive therapy once he was uncasted was probably warranted, and that it easily could have been done in an outpatient setting as well. So.
And he does receive PTOT and speech in his preschool. So he's got a good amount of services provided for him.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. A lot of good eyes on him, on his development and how he's doing.
So I'm going to make a motion to dismiss.
Second.
I second.
Any further discussion?
No.
Okay, I think we're ready.
In case number 2387, Katrina Cecil Denton, PT, it has been moved and seconded to dismiss. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll move on to case 2392, Joseph Castillo, PTA.
I'm not sure if Mr. Castillo is on the call. I don't see him. Mr. Castillo, are you present? This case was opened by the board. He was arrested and charged on September 9th of 2023 with disorderly conduct, which is a reportable misdemeanor. He was also charged with criminal damage and failure to comply with a law enforcement officer and refusal to state his full name or refusal to answer a law enforcement officer. He subsequently pled guilty to disorderly conduct and was ordered to pay a fine and complete two courses. His restitution hearing is pending, and he must continue with his probation monitoring. He is currently not working as a physical therapist assistant. The public court docket records also reveal a previous charge for disorderly conduct in 2018, which Mr. Castillo did not report to the board and did not report it on his 2022 renewal. So there's two charges of which he did fail to report, one in 2018 and one in 2023. Mr. Castillo received a copy of the investigative report, but did not submit a supplemental written response. Staff identified the possible, the following statute violation that may apply: ARS 3208, criminal charges, mandatory reporting requirements, A and B. This case is for your review.
I think this is probably another one where it would be really nice to have the person here to answer some questions, find out about why he wasn't reporting, even though he's currently not working as a PTA right now. So I'd like to move this to an informal hearing.
Second.
I agree with you. My concern is that he's choosing not to practice, but he still could. There's nothing saying he couldn't practice as a PTA, so I'd like to get him in sooner than later.
Yep.
To come before us.
Any additional information that you would like me to obtain for Mr. Castillo?
Go ahead.
Yeah. I'd like to know his status and what his plan is as far as whether he has an intention to practice as a PT or PTA, I guess.
What he did tell me last week when I talked to him is that he has he had his fingerprint clearance card suspended, and there is a hearing with a judge. The judge is going to give him a determination within 90 days of whether or not they're going to give him his fingerprint clearance card back, and his employer has made the decision for him that he cannot practice, at least in that clinic, until that decision is made. So he's working in marketing at this point and doing some patient care, but he's a tech. And I advised him that he needs to be careful about using the PTA credential. So I will, and I'll find out when his next court hearing is due related to the restitution hearing. He thought it
Wendy,
would be.
Would it?
Excuse me. I just got an email from Mr. Castillo. He says he's on the call. If we can't hear him. Okay. Mr. Castillo, you may be muted.
There's a 480 number that just dropped off and rejoined. Mm-hmm. I wonder if that's him.
The last two digits of this number, 80.
Yes, hello, this is Joseph.
Oh, great.
Hello, I'm not sure if you're able to hear me. I've been on the call, I'm not sure. Can you all hear me now?
We can hear you now. Yes, thank you.
Okay. I apologize about that. I was urgently trying to unmute and that I don't know what was going on. My apologies.
So have you heard our initial discussion so far?
Yes, I did. Just for a quick brief moment, I hung up just to try to rejoin in hopes to one unmute so that way you guys could hear me.
Okay. Are you willing to answer questions from the board?
Yes, ma'am.
Perfect. Thank you.
Excuse me, Dr. Bastillo, Mr. Harris, we have a motion that's been moved and seconded. Okay. Do we need to address that first before moving forward, or can they just rescind that motion at this time? You're muted.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the board, Judy. I think at this time we can just table the motion and hear from the licensee, and if you want to, you know, modify the motion or just, you know, move to a vote, you can do that at that time.
I'll withdraw the motion at this time.
I'll withdraw my second.
Thank you.
Okay.
So Mr. Castillo, can you tell us what you're currently doing in your job right now?
Yes, ma'am. Well, I personally currently own an LLC of my own, and I do some consulting as well as social media marketing. So I've been doing that with the current company that I'm with, and I've also been one kind of assisting on the side, just doing some tech work for them. Ever since I found out that one, my fingerprint clearance card was suspended. So I've just been doing that currently.
And what area of consulting and in your marketing, is that healthcare? What is that?
No, just online. SEO optimization, web design, things of that criteria.
Okay, great. Thank you. And did you meet with the judge, or is that coming up?
Pertaining to the criminal case?
Yes.
Yes, ma'am. Everything is actually all pleaded out as well. Okay. I'd also like to just reiterate, I know that they mentioned that the restoration hearing was still pending. We actually came to an agreement with that as well, and all of that has been resolved, so there's nothing else that's currently pending.
Okay, and so have they reinstated your fingerprint clearance card, or is that still coming up?
That one, so I met with the administrative judge, and he mentioned the process that one, he would kind of submit his recommendation, and then I should be hearing from them within 80 days. So to answer that question, no, it hasn't been reinstated yet, but he said that one, I should hear something within that allotted time.
Mr. Castillo, it's Dr. King. A couple questions regarding, so you had a disorderly conduct in 2018 and then another one here in 2023. Was that with the same person, same situation, or those really different people?
They were with two different people. The 2018 incident, That was actually with a college buddy of mine. We were both on the wrestling team, actually, and we met up at, you know, a bar, and we were kind of just roughhousing with each other, and it got taken, you know, a little bit further. The bar manager basically, you know, called the cops and whatnot, and we were both arrested that day. And then the 2023, that one was with my son's mother, and it was, I'd like to just kind of just state for the record that one that wasn't physical, it was merely just a verbal argument.
Okay, thank you. And then if we can talk just really briefly about what you're doing now with your tech work, are you documenting in the patient's charts and things that work, the things you're doing with the patients?
No, just because one, I'm not doing anything but aside from running them through an exercise that's delegated from the PT. Aside from that, it's just, you know, just setting the patients up and basically just, you know, kind of going from the instruction from the PT.
Okay. And then I think in your statement, you did say that you're doing some, you've done some anger management courses and things like that. What other things are you doing to help support your stress levels and maybe some conflict resolution?
Well, yes. So every week I attend a meeting every Saturday morning. It's anger management. I've completed all, you know, my alcohol classes. I don't drink anymore. It's been over 172 days since I've last had a drink. I've completed over 80 hours of counseling. I've done AA. I've done domestic violence courses. I've done anger management. All of that nature. So, I've really learned just kind of one, how to regulate my emotions to, you know, not overwhelm myself. If I, you know, become stressed, then I've learned to do kind of just a support system of, you know, what I'm feeling, you know, remove myself from the environment, things of that nature.
Thank you.
This, Mr. Castillo, and again, this is not to embarrass you. This is to help us evaluate your fitness to practice. Can you give us more details on what the situation that led to the arrest in September?
So my former girlfriend, which is my son's mother, we didn't have the best of relationships. We were currently living together, and it was always kind of an on and off relationship, if you will, where, you know, we would be together, but then we'd have a lot of disagreements on what she expected out of the relationship as to what I expected. And there was a point in time where basically we were just co-parenting in the same house. And it was throughout that time that this incident happened, and basically she kind of accused me of cheating and had taken my phone, and we started just kind of verbally arguing. And after that, it got into a very heated argument, and her daughter at the time, because she has another child from a different father, actually called, she was the one that called the cops. The cops came, and basically they arrested me. They stated that, one, I wasn't complying with them because I wouldn't give them my truthful name, which that later got dismissed because in the body cam from the officers, you could actually hear me verbalize and giving them my name. Long story short, it was just a very, very heated argument that just got out of control.
How old is the daughter who called the police?
She's 16.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, sir.
Any other questions? Okay.
I have one question for Mr. Castillo. Can you, Mr. Castillo, what is your understanding of the requirements under the state press to report?
From what I understand now, just from doing the research, is a mandatory at least 10 days to report.
Thank you. No further questions.
Okay. Thoughts on where we should go?
I feel like he's done the things that he probably should be doing in order to, you know, work on the anger, you know, getting the court situations all resolved. I mean, I would personally be okay with an advisory letter, you know, regarding the 10-day requirement, but I don't feel like there's much else we would need to do with that.
Is that a motion, Giovanni? Because I'll second it if it is.
I'll make that a motion. I move that we issue an advisory letter regarding the 10-day requirement to report.
Second.
My only concern with that is that his fingerprint clearance card is suspended, and he theoretically could seek employment as a PTA. He may or may not have to disclose that, but I don't know if we need to do something until that is reinstated as well.
Is a fingerprint clearance card needed once you're already licensed and in renewal periods and all? Because I've never had to.
I think you need to just pass it to get licensed. I don't know that you need to keep it active, right? Am I missing? I don't know though.
It depends on the employer too.
Yeah, it sounds like it's the employer that's telling them that he can't work. So we're not telling them that he can't.
Mr. Harris, you want to weigh in on that?
I think you're right. I think it's up to the employer. It is a condition of licensure, so you must have it at the time, but I don't believe that there's an ongoing requirement, okay. So I think it becomes an employee-employer issue at that juncture. I do not know, though, with respect to renewal. And that's something that I would have to work with staff on to see if that's a requirement for renewal for just initial licensure.
I don't believe it is. I've never seen anything for renewal, only for the initial.
I checked with Monica on the historical perspective on that, and she said, no, it's not a requirement on renewal.
It is not.
Correct. It is required for initial licensure. There is nothing in our statute rules that specifically identify it as a renewal requirement.
Thank you.
Great. And I support the motion for an advisory letter. Any further discussion? Okay, I think we're ready for the question.
In case 2392, Joseph Castillo, PTA, it's been moved and seconded to issue an advisory letter reminding him of his duty to report in accordance with ARS 32-3208. Dr. Bastillo.
Yes.
Dr. King.
Yes.
Mr. Leone.
Yes.
Mr. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Barton.
Yes.
That motion passes.
All right. Good luck to you, Mr. Castillo.
Thank you all for your time, and I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Okay, we're going to move on to initial review for RA.
This is actually a preliminary review. And I believe RA is present.
Yes. Hello, I am here.
Hi. This is a complaint that was filed against RA. It was filed by the complaint was the patient's wife, and she alleged that RA engaged in an inappropriate relationship with her husband, who was a patient of RA. RA confirmed she engaged in a personal relationship with a patient starting approximately 1 month after he was discharged from services, which was on or about July 27th of 2023. She states that there were no inappropriate interactions that took place during treatment, but the patient openly shared difficulties he was having in his marriage. On or about August 25th, RA and the patient began the relationship, which included personal texts, sharing meals, in-person meetings, and sex. The relationship was ended by the patient on September 16th. The last contact RA had with the patient was September 17th and with the complainant on December 12th, 2023. The board may vote to open a case with a potential allegation of sexual misconduct and or ethics violations or take no action. This preliminary review is for your consideration.
Great. Thank you. Would you be willing to answer any questions?
Yes.
Okay.
I had a question. I was always reading through the investigative report. It looks like that you guys had been, he had been your patient. He was discharged. You ran into each other at the gym and you stated that you had exchanged phone numbers. And I was curious, had you never exchanged phone numbers prior to his discharge from the clinic?
No, we did not. There was no contact after he was discharged up until I was at the gym that day and he had approached me.
Okay, so you didn't have a cell phone while he was your patient?
No, I did not. It was in his case files, but I personally never had it in my own personal possession.
Okay, thank you. Had you guys been on each other's social media or had any other outside of the clinic interactions with each other?
None at all.
Discharged?
None at all.
Okay, thank you.
During your time treating the patient, was there any conversation or interaction in regards to his relationship and trying to, you know, show him an out of his relationship or anything like that?
The extent of that from my memory was he would communicate with us and with the entire staff. It was at an outpatient facility. That he was having issues at home with his wife and was wanting to divorce. Everybody that I worked with knew that I had been through that just a couple years prior, and I was the only employee there that had ever been through a divorce, and so that's when they brought up maybe talking to me about how I went about that. That was the extent of any of conversation that while he was a patient.
Did you give any advice on that?
I just shared my personal experience on why the reasons I filed for divorce and the process that I went through it with him. I didn't give him advice on like how to pursue it in his own personal relationship. I just spoke on my experience up until he was discharged and him and I had started a personal relationship is when I had given him the contact information of a divorce lawyer that a friend had recommended to me.
Okay.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Mr. Harris, would we need to dismiss this case or just take no action?
No action. There is no case opened at this point.
I would move that we take no action.
Second. Yeah. Any other discussion? Okay, I think we're ready, Judy.
In the matter of RA, it has been moved and seconded to take no action. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Great. Thank you. Okay, we're going to move on to another preliminary review then, KF.
Yes, this is another preliminary review, and I believe KF is on the call today. We received a complaint from a patient who observed KF, who is a physical therapist, perform dry needling on a patient across from her in the clinic, and she was concerned about his safe needle handling techniques. She stated that she observed KF use the same needle in three different points on the patient's body and also use the same needle depth gauge tube all three times. This matters for your review to determine what action, if any, will be taken.
Thank you.
So I'll defer to the professional members, but I don't see anything here unless the professionals do.
Mm-mm. I can hear.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the investigative report and these additional information about acceptable practice for certification of dry needling supports that there's no substantiation to the allegation.
Okay. So I move that we take no action.
If KF would like to speak, he can, but sometimes it's better to shut up.
Yeah. I agree with you, and thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right, so I'll move that we take no action.
Second.
I'll second.
Any further discussion? Okay, I think we're ready.
In the matter of KF, it has been moved and seconded to take no action. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Okay. Are we good with the recording, Judy?
We're fine. We had that break.
Okay. Fine. All right, so now we're down to agenda item 10, PT Compact Matters, review and consideration and action for Victoria Adams, PT. Is Victoria on the call?
It is my understanding that she wasn't going to be here. I don't know for sure if she changed.
Okay.
So Victoria Adams, PT, practices in Arizona on a PT compact privilege by virtue of her Arkansas home state license. Ms. Adams also maintains a Georgia compact privilege. Ms. Adams purchased the AZ Law Jurisprudence Exam on November 26, 2023, and was granted eligibility to test on November 28th of 23. Ms. Adams took and passed the exam on December 20th, 2023, and purchased her AZ compact privilege on December 27th, 23. At that time, Ms. Adams' Arkansas home state license was due to expire March 1st, 2024. On January 31st, 2024, after renewing her Arkansas license, Ms. Adams renewed, meaning she repurchased her Arizona compact privilege, but did not retake the Arizona Law Jurisprudence Exam. Pardon me. Despite a wide variety of references where jurisprudence requirements in general and and Arizona jurisprudence requirements specifically were clearly identified. Information regarding jurisprudence requirements are readily available on both the PT Compact website as well as the board's website. And when her exam eligibility was granted, Ms. Adams received an email explicitly highlighting the board's jurisprudence requirements prior to each compact privilege purchase, initial or renewal. Ms. Adams is requesting that she be exempted from the board's renewal jurisprudence requirements on the basis of having completed it shortly prior to her renewal. The board's current processes with respect to individuals who do not complete the jurisprudence exam either at initial or renewal were adopted at its meetings in May of 2022 for renewals and December of 2022 for initial purchases.
The board directed staff to contact compact privilege holders who were non-compliant with the jurisprudence requirements at initial and renewal to provide a grace period to return to compliance. Since January 2023, the board has sent 83 notices for non-compliant renewals and 9 notices for non-compliant initial purchases. Of those combined notices, only 2 individuals were brought back to the board for non-compliance within the grace period. Each of those ultimately terminated their compact privilege prior to their board experience or their board appearance. There are currently 467 active compact privilege purchase holders in Arizona. So in your meeting materials, you were provided with Ms. Adams' exemption request, as well as multiple documented areas where jurisprudence requirements are referenced, both on the PT Compact website and on the board's website. Based on the 83 notices that were sent, in part were the discovery of this issue back in 2022, where we had found that there were a variety of them. We prior personnel did not know that there was a separate way to check those who had renewed. So there were about 30 cases that were catch up, but since that time, the remainder of those notices have been submitted. So in essence, the board's decision in this case is going to impact how board staff proceeds with future similar circumstances. So the matter is for your review and discussion.
So just so that I understand, essentially what we have here is that Ms. Adams is asking us to kind of ratify her decision not to take the jurisprudence exam. She's not asking for an exemption before the fact.
True. True.
Okay.
And she really did take it 2 months before her renewal, though.
Yes, she did. That's true. A compact privilege always revolves around the home state license, whether right. It's 1 day or 12 months or 2 years. They, regardless of that time frame in which they make their initial purchase, if their home state license is renewed and their compact privilege is expiring, they purchase a new compact privilege, regardless of the time frame.
I'm assuming the question she was asked was, has she taken the Arizona jurisprudence exam on buying the compact? I've seen it before.
Correct. There is that question. I don't know for sure the exact questions, but there are, there is identification on the PT Compact website that, the jurisprudence requirements are state by state. They are asked, like, I believe it's 3 different times in the application to attest to having taken the jurisprudence exam prior to that purchase. There are multiple states, Arkansas being another one of them, that does require the jurisprudence exam with an initial and with a renewal. So people make these compact privilege purchases at any time frame within their licensure cycle of their home state license. And then some will turn around and renew it immediately. Others will turn around and renew it later. This is not the only case that had that close of a proximity. In fact, there were some that were even closer, that did comply with the board's letters. It's based on the board's previous decisions and the board's policy statement. Yeah. It's handled this way.
So Judy, what do the letters say?
There's a copy of it in your board materials. Okay. It's page, let me find it.
Sorry, I didn't switch over from the last case. Sorry.
It is, page 17.
Okay.
30 in your document.
Thanks.
This letter, this current iteration of the letter was adopted by the board in 2022.
My thoughts are, again, I get that it can be confusing. So I know we went over this early on in Compact, where it says several times, you know, that they have to attest that they've taken and passed the jurisprudence exam. In her mind, she has. But when she got a letter from you saying that was for your first compact, now you're renewing, you've got to take it again. It sounds like she's chosen not to. Wherein I could see you said, well, I thought it's what it meant, but, you know, my bad. I better take it so that I stay in good standing with my compact privilege.
And she's still within the 30 days we gave her. That hasn't expired yet.
Correct.
And I get her point. I get her point. She literally just took it.
Sure.
But, and I don't really like the rule, but I don't know where else to draw the line. The rule's the rule. She's the one who bought the compact literally 5 weeks before her license renewed. And so, you know, I think my inclination was to deny her exempt, and she still got 8 days to go out and take it. I'm assuming it can be done within 8 days, can it, Judy?
If she registers and pays for it, yes.
You can take that pretty much every single day.
You can, yeah, absolutely. It is not a fixed date test, and I do believe that it's open on the weekends. She made a notation that she works, so she didn't have time to go take it.
Well, she shouldn't have to study much. She just has to.
You're right.
The AZ law is offered 7 days a week.
Thank you.
Christmas and holidays too.
There we go.
So, I guess the only thing in my mind is, and I worry that this creates a more work, but there's a part of me that wants to offer to create an exception where if you contact us within the grace period, maybe we can look at the individual situation, but I'm a little concerned that we don't have the authority to do that, given the way the rules are written.
I also feel like that's going to open a whole can of worms.
Yep.
I'm concerned about that too.
Yep. I mean, if there's been 83 non-compliance notices sent out, some of those would have come to us. I don't think we've put it in the staff's hands for a reason. So they stopped coming to us every single time.
Right.
Because they were, and it was just daunting, and it was the same story over and over and over and over.
And that's about a fifth of all the compact privilege holders, which is still, that's a big number.
It is.
It goes back to they're just not reading. Mm-hmm. Everything that's required, at least in my mind.
Right.
I mean, she could have actually held off maybe getting her Arizona compact license until she renewed, which would have been one other way to have handled this.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah, or potentially work with your employer to help offset the extra cost if it's a cost issue.
Mm-hmm.
The Arizona board is one of the few, if not the only state, that does not charge a compact fee.
Oh.
The compact compact commission charges a fee. Arizona does not charge an additional fee.
Understand.
Arizona just simply requires the jurisprudence exam at both purchase levels, which again is not unique. But It's up to you to decide whether we stay the course that has been set or make an adjustment to the way that it's processed.
So would the appropriate motion be to deny her request for exemption, retaking the jurisprudence exam and, direct staff to connect with her to make, you know, or somehow let her know that she still has some time to get that done before her grace period's up?
I think that's correct.
That would be my motion then.
Second.
I agree.
Any more discussion?
I'm in agreement on that too.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I think we're ready.
It's been moved and seconded to deny the request for exemption and to inform Ms. Adams she must comply with the jurisprudence requirements of Arizona. Dr. Bustillo.
Yes.
Dr. King.
I think she's frozen.
We'll come back to Dr. King. Mr. Leone.
Yes.
Mr. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Barton.
Yes.
Dr. King, are you available? I'll mark her vote as abstained due to technical difficulties. That motion passes. For my notes, can you remind me who made that motion and seconded it, please?
Dr. King made it.
I seconded it.
Okay, thank you. That motion passes.
Okay, we can move on then. And to old business, review and consideration. We have cases 2131 and 2228, Stephen Kempton.
Dr. Bustillo, I'm recused from this case, so I'm going to turn off my camera.
Yes, thank you, Giovanni.
That means we have to wait for Dr. King to come back.
Yep,
it does. Dr. Bustillo, would you like to I guess we can't really move on too much. We could move on to the Rules Committee while we wait for Ms. Or for Dr. King to rejoin.
Okay. We can move on for the Rules Committee.
Okay. So
Dr. King's rejoining right now.
Dr. King's rejoining. Thank you.
He's going to rejoin via telephone.
I failed miserably at having my notes in front of me to move on to that one. Okay. Dr. King, are you back?
She's going to join via phone, she said.
Okay.
There she is.
It looks like she's in.
There she is.
I'm here. Oh. So sorry.
Welcome back, Dr. Yep. King.
Thank you. Sorry.
Okay. You're not the only one with technical difficulties.
I don't know what happened, but thank you for checking. I'm good. Thank you.
Okay. So we are at old business, case 2131, case 2228, Stephen Kempton. Review, discussion, possible action regarding his monitoring reports.
So at the board's December 12, 2023 meeting, the board reviewed Mr. Kempton's compliance with his consent agreement. The board requested another review of Mr. Kempton's compliance at its February 27, 2024 meeting. To ensure the board has a complete record of Mr. Kempton's compliance to date with the terms of his consent agreement, The table provided in your documentation has been updated. Mr. Kempton's monitoring reports, as well as his most current therapist report, are included as attachments. It includes the monitoring reports that were dated December 14th, 2023. This information was previously supplied to the board in December in a raw data format. So
the report, the official report was provided. Also a January 9th, 24 version, a February 9th, 24 report. The only therapist report received in that time frame was received on February 16th, 2024, and accompanied by an email referencing the timeliness of the report. A therapist report for January 10th, 24 was not received. On January 23rd, 2024, the board was informed that on January 22nd, 24, Mr. Kempton's counsel added a statement to and disputed his NPDB report, which is National Practitioner Data Bank report. That statement was also provided to you as an attachment. The board is also provided with chronological memos and attachments from all previous board meetings in this matter. So the matter is for your review.
Thank you for being here, Mr. Kempton.
Thank you.
I'm sorry. Additionally, I should report that it's been agendized. Mr. Kempton had posed the fact that he had a question about discussing his chaperone guidelines. So that's also been added as a separate attachment in your files today.
Would the board like to discuss the reports or have him go to his request first?
Mr. Kempton, why didn't we get a January report from the therapist?
From what he sent me on the text on January 9th, I said, did you send in the report? And then he sent me a text showing that it had been sent. And so normally he shows me this email confirmation, which is right there, and it says that it's been sent. So.
Judy?
We researched all received documents. I had not received.
Okay. Well. I got my text date stamp, so I don't, on Tuesday, January 9th, he sent me a picture of, it's a screenshot of his computer screen saying your secure reply was sent is what it shows. If you can see that, I don't know, but that's time and date stamped on January 9th.
Is the email that we have from Jamar Pruitt dated February 15th saying he forgot to submit the monthly report? Is he referring to the January report?
No, he submit the February report 5 days late.
I see. Okay, thank you. Sorry. So nothing in January and a late February.
Mr. Kempton's therapist has previously had difficulties submitting reports with the email with he's had technical difficulties with the emails for some reason, but I researched everywhere I could think of.
Is this the first you found out, you've heard, Mr. Kempton, that the February report was not submitted?
Yeah, it shocked me. So I immediately went to my phone because I checked with him, and then he sends me a confirmation page, a picture every single month that it was securely sent.
Okay.
And so I just texted him and I said, hey, did you send a January report? And he said, I did. And I said, I'm in the meeting right now and they're saying they didn't get it. He says, I sent it on January 9th, which is the same. I mean, this is his text right here. As he said, they didn't get it. And I said, I sent it on January 9th. So I don't.
Does his confirmation indicate the address it was sent to?
I can look at the.
It's entirely possible if there was a typo.
There could have been a typo, or he sent it to the wrong person. It's not. He did send it to the wrong person. I don't know. It's someone's sjp22billing@gmail.com. Is that anybody's email?
That's his email.
Sent to subject. Oh, that's his?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, then it doesn't say where it was sent. It just says, I mean, I can zoom in and it can show you what the, can you see that? Oh, there it is. It says your report was successfully sent, but can you see that?
It looks like he sent it to himself.
It does look like he sent it to himself.
Okay, I'm texting him right now.
I know some board members may feel differently about this. You know, I don't know what else Mr. Kempton is supposed to do except maybe change therapists, but I don't know if that's beneficial to him. This does seem to be outside of his control. He did follow up with the therapist, did get confirmation that it was sent in appeal. It appears the therapist is the one that messed up, but
Yeah, I agree. I mean, in fact, I think the last time we talked, we specifically said you'd go get confirmation. And so, I mean, he did. We can see the text. We can see the conversations. Well, I can see him following up.
I think Dr. King said make sure it happens. And, you know, it didn't happen, but, you know, it seems like we're always springing stuff on Mr. Kempton at these meetings. And I wish we would have said, hey, you didn't get it, because we could have, because that could have been addressed last month. But I know that's not our job. It's his job. With regard to the affiliated monitors reports, you know, they're generally very good. The therapist reports are good. You know, he seems to be compliant, but for an issue that I think is outside of his control. I'm disappointed that it's outside it, that we don't have it, but I think my disappointment's to Mr. Ruitt, not to Mr. Kempton. As far as Mr. Kempton, your chaperone request, we'll hear you on it, whatever you want to say.
Okay. Are you guys ready for that?
I do have a question on your monitoring report, though.
Yes, ma'am.
The monitor did go into one specific case with a person with low back pain, and the leaving out of doing a neural screen on this person.
This was a couple months ago.
Yeah. And you're the one that's able to provide the specific charts for to be reviewed, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So you specifically gave this one to the monitor to have.
Well, yeah. I have my office staff send it, but I tell them which patients.
Which ones, right? Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I guess my concern is not too long after you took your lumbar spine class, you know, you're leaving out some pertinent information on an evaluation that then you gave to the monitor for, you know, to be looked at again. And so I guess I was just hoping for a little bit better follow through. Can you help me with that one?
I could help you out if I knew exactly which patient or which case we're talking about. Because he pulls charts every month. And so I remember one that he said that I didn't do a slump or a SLR test on a patient. And so we talked about that and I talked to him about it. And so from my rationale, the patient didn't have any distal or radiating symptoms. The pain was staying localized in their low back, so I didn't see the need to do a neural exam on that patient. But then He told me I should do it on every single back patient, so I started doing it after that. I'm not sure if that's the patient you're referring to.
Yeah, I think the patient had knee pain in addition. So to just tease out the difference between lumbar spine and knee.
Oh, okay. I'm then that's not the that is not the one I'm that I'm thinking.
Okay. All right. Yeah, and I would agree with you. Basically, if there aren't distal symptoms, the need for a neural screen is less indicative. So.
And that's what he talked about. And I was like, this patient didn't have any distal symptoms. He's like, you should still do a neural exam on each back patient. So since then, I've started, you know, anytime okay. He gives me recommendations, I try really hard to follow
them. Well, it's good to be thorough. I mean, that's, very positive.
Okay. I have a question for the board, if that's okay, about his last report. There's a patient that I've been seeing for her knee. And she's had knee pain for a super long time. She had a car versus pedestrian accident where she was struck by a car, had a tibial plateau fracture, had a surgery. She's had long time pain. I've seen this patient for a super long time and I thought I was seeing it because it's more of like a maintenance thing for this patient because every time she comes in, I tried to discharge her once and a month later she came back and her knee started to get tight again. She started to have pain. And so I've kind of what has worked best for, and I even sent her back to another doctor. I said, go get a follow up with another doctor and see what they say. And that orthopedic surgeon said, there's nothing we can do. And so I thought I was in the right with seeing this patient, but in the report, it says that that this patient didn't fall within that criteria. And so I just maybe, is this the right format to get some?
Is that the patient that's paying you cash?
This patient? No.
Okay.
This one's not. She's United Healthcare.
Is this the 55-year-old patient post total knee on her 38th visit?
No, that she got discharged. That was, no, her initials. This is the most recent report. Her first initial is A. But yeah, I can look at. And so is the last report, and it, you know, because I've been seeing her for I think a couple of years, and I initially saw her 3 years ago. Saw her through, got her function as good as we could get it, and then she discharged for a month or two and the pain came back. And so she came back in and we started seeing her. And then I recommended she go to another physician and get a secondary opinion. And the other orthopedic surgeon was like, there's nothing I can do for this. Continue to go to therapy. And so that's what we've been doing. And what I found the best regimen, because we would test it and I'd go, okay, let's go 2 weeks without therapy and see how it goes. And we found the best for her is once a week where I see her and that's what keeps her knee functional. Cause she's a manager at a restaurant and she's standing and walking and moving a lot on that knee. She's younger. I
39-year-old patient been attending PT for 3 years. That one? 144 yes. visits?
Yes, that one. That's the one. Correct. And so I talked to Dr. Bays about it. I talked to Dr. Bays about it, and he's like, well, you could do a progress note and change your goals, but he's like, I don't think UnitedHealthcare pays for maintenance therapy. And so if that's the case, then I can just talk to her and... Can I transfer her to cash pay if she wants to do cash pay? I don't know what to do in this situation.
Yeah, it's a very difficult situation. You know, our laws, you know, their statute basically, you know, says that you can't treat beyond reasonable benefit and that you do need to be making progress toward goals. You know, if somebody wants to pay cash, they can they can pay cash. That's, I mean, that's no problem. But maintenance therapy is just very difficult. Because the people want to keep coming. I get it.
Well, I mean, I've had patients that want to keep coming, and I've discharged them anyways because I'm like, hey, I've maxed out. Like, we've plateaued. I've got you as good as we can get. And I have that talk with them. But this patient, her function does decline after, if she doesn't come to therapy. And so I guess, based on the board's recommendation, I'll do what you guys would prefer.
And I guess the monitor's concern there, Mr. Kempton, is that that's not documented.
Right.
I thought I documented in a progress notes. I said this patient would benefit from maintenance therapy.
Yeah.
I thought I did document his main.
Well, thing I don't. We don't.
When,
we don't
he, when
see
I talked to him, it was the goals.
And we don't see the notes. And we don't. We haven't reviewed the charts. I'm just looking at. You know, I'm just looking at the monitors. Page 7 of the monitor's February 9th report.
Yeah.
It's just,
well, he told me
care has not been warranted.
What he told me to change was the goals. He said two things. He said, I don't think United Healthcare has the option for maintenance therapy. He said he thinks that's only federal payers. And that he's like, you could have the patient call and see if they cover that. He said, secondly, for documentation purposes, you need to change your goals to be tailored more around maintenance therapy goals, not other goals. So if no one has something specific, I can just follow what the Dr. Bays has been telling me to do, and I'll keep doing that.
Mm-hmm. Excuse me, board members, just for your information, I did just receive the January 10th report. And in doing so, I looked back at previous reports. It does appear that Mr. Kempton's therapist sends these reports to himself and to me. So my assumption with the previous January report that he may have sent in January, he just did not include me in the receipt of it. I did take that and drop it into your folder. It's just titled Kempton Therapist Late Submission and a January 10th date.
He just texted me another picture of his computer screen saying it was sent.
Have you been happy with this therapist, Mr. Kempton? Do you feel like he's helping you?
I do. I like him.
Okay.
I think he's a good therapist, yes.
I was just going to say, after reading the two compliance monitoring reports from Dr. Bay, it does look like that Mr. Kempton is listening to his direction and his advice and making some changes. He's got some ways to go. I did want to ask you, though, Mr. Kempton, the monitor did make note on both the reports that there were editing or some changes. He's not sure what they were for each of the charts before he received them on the day that they were sent to him. So can you just give us an idea of what might be changed in a chart before you send it to the monitor?
Yes. If you could tell me in WebPT, if you do an addendum, it will tell you, you give an explanation of what the addendum is for, but it's for personal records. And so it's not. And so if you let me know which one, I can go to that report and I could tell you. Sometimes it could be that I forgot to put a specific timed unit on a patient, or that I didn't put, I reviewed my stuff and I hadn't put a signature where I need it, or the phrase chaperone on there, or something like that. I don't know exactly what it was though, unless you tell me. Because I write explanations in each addendum. I just didn't know for what.
Those aren't shared with us. We don't have patient names or any of the information of the specifics of the charts. I just noted that he said in both reports that like 3 of the 7 or 5 of the 7 had addendums dated the date they were sent to him. Yeah. And I get that you want to make sure that your charts look really great when you send them to him, but I would say that maybe just send them as they are. There may be opportunities for you to learn from him if he sees it as it is versus bringing it up to speed before you send it to him, because there may be a habit that you know what I mean, need to be more aware of if you're having to make these addendums before adding a signature or making sure the chaperone's in there. That should already be in there, right? At this
right,
point.
Yeah.
So I would just encourage you not to make the addendums before you send them to him.
Okay.
Just a thought.
Yeah. I can do that. I saw that on 2 reports ago. Mm-hmm. And so I made sure to try not to do anything. There may have been 1 only or 2 from the last report.
Okay.
But I think those were done before the day he asked for them.
Okay. Sure.
Yeah.
Thank
but
you.
Yes, I hear you, Dr. King, and I appreciate that, and I will definitely take that into consideration and do that.
Okay. Thank you. Other than that, I appreciate the efforts you're making. Moving in the direction with the monitor, sounds like he's got some very good insight.
Mm-hmm.
And has pointed out some really great opportunities for best practices for you.
Thank you.
Mr. Kevin, would you like to talk about your request?
Yes. Are we ready for that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So as I was, well, it all came to light when I talked to the chaperone and we talk about things about every week, she made mention. And so about being able to practice, and this has been a long time, and she showed the interest in wanting to practice. And so as I started to think about it, I started to question, as I was like, well, what's the point of the chaperone? And it is from the board's point, you want the chaperone to ensure the public safety. Is that correct? Is that a correct? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so, which I totally get with that, you know, with that complaint, I totally get that, and that makes sense to me. And so as I was thinking about that, I was like, well, we need to make sure that the board is satisfied and that everybody's satisfied that everyone can feel that the public is safe with while I'm practicing during this time. And as I think about it, I was like, well, I know there is chaperone certification. There's a couple chaperone certifications that companies like the PB24 course that I took, they offer a chaperone certification. And I'm like, well, if I can get, you know, one of my techs or even my current chaperone, if I can get them both certified and they have that certification, that maybe I could have my techs be a chaperone for me, my female tech be a chaperone for me, or even the PTA, my current chaperone, she can be a chaperone, but maybe also practice as well when she's not chaperoning. Mm-hmm. And so that can satisfy her that she can start to practice and work on things It would be beneficial for everybody in that situation while still keeping the public safe and still having that documentation, keeping the public safe.
Mm-hmm.
So that seemed like a win-win for everybody to me.
What is your chaperone doing right now when you're not treating a female patient?
hanging out.
Okay.
Just hanging out.
Mm-hmm. So you're looking for.
Sometimes I'll try to schedule it different where, you know, I'll say, hey, try not to schedule female patients. And so she'll come in a little later, leave early or something like that when there's not female patients. But it's not, I don't think it's for best practice for patients trying to force them to come at specific times, make them work around my schedule. I'm trying to be open to, you know, let them come when they're available too. And so it's kind of cumbersome to do that. Mm-hmm.
Well, I know that we were looking for somebody that had some type of background for your chaperone, and that's why we had you submit, you know, people in their resumes and things like that. So if there is a chaperone class that tech could take and then show us that, you know, that they would know what we're looking for, I think that might make you have better use of your staff. Which would be great.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah, no,
My only concern is I don't know how we can pre-approve this. I think it's going to depend on the person. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you may have your staff get certified and we may say no, Mr. Kempton. And so, you know,
fair.
I think if you want to go through the process and submit somebody to us, we'll evaluate them, and it will require an addendum to your paragraph 12 of your board order.
Mm-hmm.
Because right now that requires an Arizona licensed healthcare provider and someone pre-approved by the board.
Mm-hmm.
But right. I don't think we can approve it in a vacuum.
Fair enough.
Mm-mm.
So I know that doesn't give you much comfort.
Yeah.
But I would say
I have a, what's that? Sorry.
I mean, I would say, at least in my mind, I don't have an issue, at least in theory, with having a PTA as opposed to a PT or another kind of person with experience, at least in theory. I mean, obviously, I would agree with Mr. Greer that we do need, you know, we'll need to look at the resume and approve it, but, you know, at least in theory, the request doesn't seem unreasonable, assuming that the person meets the chaperone requirements and the resume is, you know, such that we're comfortable with them.
Yeah. A tech won't do that if they're not licensed and they're not certified. So,
yeah, that paragraph would have to be changed because that's what I was thinking about. I have a tech right now, a female tech that would be willing to go through that chaperone and go through that course and get certified in that. And that was the other thing is with my chaperone right now is I could get her certified and she can chaperone if the tech couldn't, I could have two chaperones there. And so, the PTA, my chaperone now could also practice is what she's wanting to do. And practice and then chaperone as well.
I think there was another stipulation in the order that they couldn't be employed by you.
Yeah.
That's
right.
So
that would have to be changed.
Yeah, so that would be
independent as well. Contractor.
Dr. King has left the meeting.
We're back.
The only things that are making me a little bit uncomfortable, I can certainly see your point, Mr. Hampton, in trying to utilize your staff as efficiently as you can, especially if you're paying for them. Some of the reasons that we made sure it was someone licensed was because the power differential between a PT and a tech, and would the tech feel they had a voice if they saw something concerning. The other thing that would make me a little bit nervous about it and would be just that if it was one of your techs or PTAs, and they have patients and they're with someone and a female patient comes in and their patient's running late, they have to leave that patient to come and chaperone you. And so I just think navigating around them having multiple priorities, around,
as well as supervision. I just think it seems like a bit of a slippery slope this early in. So it's just my thoughts. I just wanted to share those thoughts with you.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that. I think they will discuss the power differential in that course. I think that's what that's the purpose of that certification, is so they understand very specifically what their role is and what their job is and so on and so forth. And so I think that would be addressed. And as far as employee leaving another patient, I totally get that. And so that is something I would have to try to, you know, figure out reasonable answer to.
Okay.
Mr. Harris, could we pre-approve the course if they gave us, if we had sufficient knowledge of what the course taught, could we pre-approve the course? Not necessarily the person, but my concern is he sends a bunch of people to this course and then we later decide, hey, that doesn't cut it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I, Mr. Greer, members of the board, I think, at the appropriate time, you could, pre-approve the course, but I think you would only do that at the point that you would feel comfortable that if somebody went through that course, you would be prepared to modify the consent agreement.
So someone wouldn't necessarily have to pass the course before we'd consider them, but we'd consider Judy Chepius, this is her resume, this is her experience, and she's intending and taking the course. We could consider that at that point. We can't do it today. It's not agendized for that.
Right. Correct. Okay. Yeah.
Go ahead, Mr. Harris.
No, I was just going to add that we should only do that though when you know the board would consider amending the consent agreement to allow a modification of the current terms of chaperoning.
And I think the board can discuss today, and if the board, if anybody on the board disagrees with me, please let me know, but I think we can probably discuss whether we're comfortable amending the order to allow a tech instead of a PTA or a PT, like a licensed provider. And I think we can probably discuss, you know, if we're open to further amendments. Hearing no objection, I'm going to assume we can.
We're all looking at the agenda to see if we can.
Yeah.
I mean, because the agenda says we're going to consider his request to modify the terms. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, with respect to chaperone, yeah.
Yeah. And so I guess that brings up, I think it would be helpful for Mr. Kempton and probably for the board before he goes through the trouble of getting this course approved to discuss whether we're comfortable having a tech do this or we think it needs to be a licensed provider. And I think in particular, you know, I'll tell you, my initial thought is that I don't have a problem with it, but I would be interested in hearing from all of the board, but specifically the professional members, is there some kind of a rationale that we have or think that maybe a licensed provider would be helpful for this?
Yeah, well, I think initially,
everyone wants to talk.
Yeah, we wanted a licensed provider because we knew what they would be looking for.
Yeah.
Sure.
And so, as opposed to a tech who might not really understand, the ins and outs and some of the differences. And so I think, that was really very, very specific, that somebody really had to understand what they were going to be looking for. And I feel like, you know, he's been doing it for a few months so far. Everything seems to be going very well. I'm really happy with that. And you know, from a, you know, business owner's point of view, I can appreciate some of these other issues and concerns. So, I guess it just depends on the person who would be doing it, in my mind, the tech. you know.
Yeah, and in my mind, I'm not comfortable with the tech. Not yet. We have to remember that there was a year and a half, 2 years between the first sexual misconduct complaints and then the other ones. So time, so we've been doing this a few months now. It's still new. It's a whole new thing for him, the chaperone and things. And there were some concerns about what the patient was being seen for and the treatment interventions he was choosing to do up and around sensitive areas. And so I'm not sure tech would know that. And so I'm not comfortable minimizing the knowledge and experience of who's watching him treat his female patients. Not yet.
Can I point out just
to me real quick, to me, it's a chicken and the egg problem. You know, what Mr. Barton asked is, hey, do we tell him about this course? And I don't know enough about the course to say, yes, I would approve someone or no, I wouldn't approve someone, or I wouldn't approve that person. And so, you know, I think this needs to be really, really at issue where, you know, he brings someone to us and we look at the person and we look at the potential coursework and say, yes, we'll approve that. But I think to answer maybe the question is there does seem to be at least some willingness to consider modifying it, maybe not at this time, but maybe in the future. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you know, just to kind of build on what Dr. Bustillo and King were kind of talking about, you know, we were just, and I appreciate the economics of complying with the consent agreement. So I don't want to dismiss that. But we were just, you know, basically 2 months removed of the board considering lifting the stay of revocation for compliance.
Yes.
And it's good that, you know, it seems like we're in a good place now. And you know, absent we had the little hiccup, you know, with the report. But it seems like we're on a good path here.
Mm-hmm.
And as, you know, Mr. Greer and Mr. Barton suggested, you know, maybe down the road, that's something that, you know, the board will consider. But again, we're basically 60 days into finally not having compliance issues placed on the agenda. So.
Yeah.
Can I bring up just a couple of things? And so I've had a chaperone for a year and a half or something like that. It hasn't been just a couple months. I've had a chaperone for a year and a half. I have not had a complaint since 2021. So, which is 3 years, about 3 years. I haven't had a complaint, ever since this came to my knowledge. And, if you look at the compliance thing, it hasn't had to do with a chaperone or the treatment of the patients, has nothing to do with the practice. It had to do with the reason it almost got lifted last time was because of my therapist and the reports being turned in on a timely manner. That was what that debate was for. And then before that, the problem that the board was having with me was the chaperone and no, not the chaperone, the monitoring report. Nothing to do with my practice or how I practice or how I treat patients. It had to do with the monitoring and how frequent the monitoring report is. The time before that we had an issue was where the signatures were on the report. And where the signature were nothing to do with how I treat patients, if I'm treating them safely, if I've made changes and all of those things that we're discussing today, which I totally understand. And I understand the board's previous issues with me. And any time that the board comes up with something, I work really hard to make sure that I make those changes. It's not the same thing happening over and over again. The first time you guys had a problem with my chaperone, since I've had that chaperone, I haven't had one issue. Since we've had a problem with the monitoring reports, we haven't had one issue. Since we've had a problem, I mean, the counselor report, I've done everything that I've known to make sure that those are turned in, but we did have a hiccup today with the therapist, but I've tried really hard. Anytime the board asks me to do something and I'm aware of what it is, I work super hard to make sure I do it. And I think that the board, rightfully so, has a misunderstanding of who I am and the type of person that I am, because every time that I am aware of something that is wrong, I make sure that I fix it and it does not happen again. And so if you look at my record where we've had a problem, I fix it. I make sure that I get it fixed and I'm keenly aware of what the problem was. I fix it and it does not happen again. So for me, I am so sure, like, I'm never going to treat a female patient by myself ever again, because the course that I took and the understanding that I know now and everything that I understand now, I'm never going to put myself in a situation that could lead to this, you know, a complaint. So I'm always going to have a chaperone with me. I'm always going to make sure that the chaperone is certified or that we have some kind of safeguard. And so I do appreciate that the board has been having issues with me, but it has nothing to do with the practice of patients, chaperone, the signatures or anything like that. It hasn't been like that for a long time.
Thank you, Mr. Kempton.
Mr. Karras, if we're not inclined to grant Mr. Kempton's request, is it appropriate to deny it, or is it appropriate to postpone it?
Well, Mr. Greer, members of the board, I think you could either, you know, deny it with, you know, the caveat that you're open in the future to considering certain modifications, including those to the chaperone, or you can simply take no action on it at this meeting.
I think I'd be more comfortable taking no action, because it seems like the board is at least considering looking at some of these resumes and making some changes. And we may vary on what we're willing to consider, but I think it would be appropriate to table this and maybe ask Mr. Kempton to provide maybe the resume and some of the coursework that he would like approved so that we can maybe take action on it at a future meeting. That would be my perspective.
Yeah, I agree with you, Mr. Barton.
Is that your motion?
I will make that a motion. So I will motion that we table an amendment of the consent agreement and instruct Mr. Kempton to provide the resume of his proposed additional chaperones as well as the chaperone coursework, whatever evidence he can provide us about either a course catalog or something like that, so that we can have an idea of what kind of coursework this is. And then we will agendize it for a future meeting. Mr. Kempton, do you believe you can do that before our March meeting?
Yes. Yeah. I have the one female tech that I would want her to go with. And so I can ask her and get her resume, and I can go online today, and I've already pulled up the website. And so I could probably go to a couple if you would like and try to find a couple of chaperone courses in their syllabi and have you guys look at it. On that note, the chaperone, she was like, well, if they're not going to make a change to the chaperone log, is there something we can do about the log that she does? Does she still need to do those logs where she fills out every patient their time in, time out? And I mean, yes. Well, all those stuff. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay. I think we're going to discuss agenda items later, but I'm going to move to that we agendize that for March, just so that we can, you know, again, from a business perspective, you know, the sooner we can get a result for you, the better if we can figure it out. So.
Is there a possibility? I mean, I don't want to get into financials with you, but I haven't been able to pay myself for months, a long time. I haven't been paid because of everything that has happened with this and everything that's going on and paying for the independent contractor, the chaperone and everything else. I am in a lot of financial issues. Could I get qualified and do home health? Could I get certified to do home health and see Medicare home health patients to find some kind of source of income or something somewhere? And would that be a possibility? because I don't know how much longer I can keep doing what I'm doing.
I don't know of any certification necessarily for all of you. Just need to steer.
Just get contracted. I meant just get contracted.
Oh, you just wouldn't be able to see female patients, right? Mm-hmm. Especially in their home with no one there. So it would have to be only male patients, Mr. Kempton. You can practice. You haven't limited your practice, so you can practice, I think, in any setting that's appropriate to what your knowledge and experience is, and what your skills are. We have limited your practice to the gender of patient you can treat without a chaperone. And then I would certainly tell you that because of my involvement with home health compliance, the documentation in home health is significantly, I think, more difficult than outpatient, just in my experience. But I don't think, and if there's an, and correct me if I'm wrong, board members, but I don't think we've limited his practice as far as the setting goes.
No, I don't think there's any limitation.
Yeah.
There are some functional limitations, Dr. King, like in a home health setting. I don't know if you can pick just to treat male patients, but.
Yes, you can.
The only limitation there would be you'd have to bring a chaperone with you.
Yeah, you can let whatever agency you're going with. I mean, certainly don't go out on your own, but go with an agency that's already accredited and just let them, your skill set, you know, you have to treat. They will make sure that there are only male patients on your schedule. And you will make sure that there are only male patients on your schedule, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and there's a big need, but just know that the patient's very, very different. Because generally they're all Medicare or they're access. And so the requirements for documentation are stringent. Do we want to discuss, is it agendized to discuss his request for, regarding the NDPP, the NPDB?
I believe that was just for your information, but we can certainly agendize that in the future.
Okay, thanks. Okay.
So are we back to our motion then?
I believe so. I don't know that I had a second.
No, there hasn't been a second yet.
Second.
Thank you.
Any further discussion? Okay, I think we're ready, Judy.
It's been moved and seconded to table the request for modifications of his consent agreement until such time as Mr. Kempton returns to the board with additional information regarding prospective chaperones and prospective chaperone education. Does that sum it up?
Mm-hmm. I think so, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Dr. Bustillo, a thought. I'm just thinking through, you know, what we have as evidence for where we're at with Mr. Kempton. And I'm wondering, you know, if it would be helpful for us as a board in making some of these decisions before we modify any of the consent agreement. If he was reevaluated again for a psychosexual evaluation, potentially by the same evaluator, to see if there's been any change or any, you know, change in his behavior or his patterns that they identified in his first psychosexual evaluation.
to modify the consent agreement?
Before we modify it.
My only concern is, Mr. Kempton has obviously got some financial concerns already with what we're requesting that he do. And I'm concerned that if we request too much, we may just force him out of the practice because it's not financially viable to stay. And I don't want to do that.
$2,200.
Totally agree. My only thought is that if the results come back that he's safe to practice unrestricted, then we would be modifying the consent agreement in a really potentially different way.
Yeah, I agree. I just, given what he's told us about and I don't think we need to review his finances, line by line. I trust him when he says he's having a hard time.
Yes.
Given that, I would be open to saying that's an option for sure. Mm-hmm. But I think requesting that he do it, I worry that we're going to put him into more dire financial straits. We're already making him wait a month before potentially having some financial relief on the chaperone side. That's my only concern. So I guess, Mr. Kempton, you can do with that what you will. I think, unless Kelly, Dr. King, you want to make a motion, but that's kind of my concern. Is I'm worried. I'm cautious about forcing Mr. Kempton out of the practice for financial and not for regulatory reasons. Mm-hmm. And so that I want to be very cognizant of that. And that's frankly part of the reason that I'm inclined to take a really serious look at this request for modification is if we can make it less financially burdensome, I want to do that. But I also am cognizant of the fact that we need to make sure that there's a safe practice. And so I don't know. I know that's not super helpful, but that's kind of where I am.
Yeah. Two sides of the coin.
Well, yeah. And I, back to Mr. Harris's point, we were just 2 months away from lifting his stay of revocation, maybe a little bit more time and then having him redo that, hopefully in a better financial situation so that then we can hopefully really make some substantial changes to his order.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Because obviously the goal is that this isn't permanent, right? So.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Kempton. Keep up the good work. You're on your way.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Okay. Do you need to do the recording, Judy? Are we good?
Yes, we do. Do we want to take a 5-minute break or do we just want to
stop? We can do that.
Okay. It is 12:54 right now. Return back at 1:00 p.m.
1:00.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. The recording will stop at 12:54.